Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. This episode should be landing in your feed just as you're thinking about wrapping things up for the semester. The spring semester at MSU ends pretty early, so I'm recording this after I've already submitted grades and attended the final faculty meeting of the semester. The loose ends are getting tied up, and I'm starting to transition into summer mode. If you're still in the craziness of winding down the semester, I am sending good vibes your way. Like last year, I'm going to take a break from the podcast over the summer. This is episode 54, so if you're worried you'll miss me over the summer, you can always go back and listen to old episodes, and then I'll be back in your feed in the fall. Taking a break from the podcast is one of my commitments to resetting my summer and to scaling back on the number of projects and priorities I work on over the summer. If you're interested in this and you're looking for tools and resources to help you plan your summer with greater intention so you feel really good by the end of it and not disappointed by all that you didn't get done, head into the show notes and take a look at my Summer Reset Workbook. It's only $20, and now is a great time to spend 30 to 60 minutes reflecting on your top priorities for the summer and mapping out a plan that will get you there. This month marks 2 years since I launched my sabbatical coaching business. I recently came across a journal where I wrote down my very first ideas about what my sabbatical program might look like. The journal itself is special. It has a blueberry design on the cover, and it was a gift from my sister sometime in the year after my mom passed away. My mom loved blueberries because she spent her summers as a teen in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania, and a favorite pastime of my grandmother was picking blueberries in the woods. We grew up going to the Poconos in the summer, picking blueberries, playing in the woods, and swimming in the lake. In the years since my mom died, my siblings and I often send each other things we find with blueberries on them. Anyway, the journal I wrote my sabbatical planning ideas in is this blueberry journal. And part of why that's significant is that my desire to help academics plan their sabbatical with greater intention came from the fact that I was so burned out by the time I was eligible for a sabbatical. And a big part of that was the accumulated stress and exhaustion and then grief over my mom's sudden terminal cancer diagnosis and then eventual passing. What I've learned over the past 2 years is that many of you are coming to your sabbatical and finding yourself in a similar spot. The circumstances are not the same, but there's a pervasive feeling of exhaustion and burnout that makes even a privilege like sabbatical feel overwhelming and stressful. In my blueberry journal, I wrote about the sabbatical regret I'd heard of from friends and colleagues who wished they had done their sabbatical differently. I wrote down my reflections and thoughts that there must be a better way to plan so you didn't feel badly at the end. I reflected on how hard it can be to switch gears, to slow down and rest, but also about how staying on autopilot during sabbatical often doesn't allow for the rest that I know I needed and so many of you need as well. I also wrote about the different seasons of my sabbatical and what each one offered me personally and professionally, and about the importance of aligning my sabbatical goals with what I really needed to get out of that time, which was rest. I didn't need to start an ambitious new project during sabbatical. I needed to get back to a place where I was excited about my work. I really enjoyed reading those early thoughts and ideas and seeing how many of them are still reflected in my work with clients over 2 years later. I also know that after helping 37 academics plan their sabbaticals, I've learned so much about the sabbatical planning and sabbatical taking experience. Each individual client I work with ends up creating a unique sabbatical plan that meets their needs and goals, but there are also patterns across the folks that I work with. So the biggest questions I hear about sabbaticals are, how do I make the most of my sabbatical? How do I create structure during an unstructured time? How can I make my sabbatical feel like a sabbatical if I can't leave town? How much work do I have to do during my sabbatical? How do I set boundaries during my sabbatical? I hear these questions over and over again. Not everyone asks all of them, but they're the constant refrain to people's stress, worry, and wondering about how to plan a good sabbatical. I did write a blog post about these questions, and I'll put a link in the show notes, but I want to just say a few words about each of those questions right now. So the first, how do I make the most of my sabbatical? This one makes sense, right? You've worked so hard to get the job you're in, to get to the point where you can earn a pre-tenure or post-tenure sabbatical. You have this moment. You know it's a privilege. The worry is, what if I waste it? And a big part of that worry comes from the fact that we don't get a lot of explicit information about how we're supposed to use the time. Most of the information comes from your institution, I think, and that's usually about how are you going to prove that you use the time well. And what your institution is concerned about is your scholarly productivity. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be concerned with this, but your institution is not thinking about you as a whole person. And sometimes, and for many of us, in order to get to a place where we can be productive scholars, we have to actually scale back first, and we need to rest, and we need to take care of ourselves. So the work I do with clients is focused on figuring out what is most important for you right now? What is the top priority? And then we answer that question, how do I make the most of my sabbatical, through an individualized lens. Your colleague, who is not burned out and exhausted, might be starting a new research project during sabbatical, and that's great for them, but that might not be what you need. That relates to question number 4, so I'll skip to that. How much work do I have to do during my sabbatical? Again, I think often people feel like there needs to be a big project that defines sabbatical, and I just don't think that this is the case. A productive sabbatical can look a lot of ways. And it's not just about having a big product at the end, right? It doesn't have to be, I wrote a book, or I wrote a book proposal, or I published 2 articles. Sometimes the most productive use of your sabbatical is reading and thinking and planning for the next project, or trying to figure out what is inspiring me right now. What are the interesting questions? So I don't think there is any clear answer about how much you have to do during a sabbatical or what that needs to look like. Again, the right amount of work for you is going to depend on what you need to get from your sabbatical. Another big question is how to create structure when you have an unstructured time. Now, some people don't struggle with this and they like having an empty calendar that's wide open, and that's great. Personally, I am pretty routine oriented, and I know that for my sabbatical, I really wanted to make sure that I didn't either just kind of like lay on the couch the whole time and feel terrible, or just work, you know, 8 hours a day and then have my sabbatical feel basically like normal work, but without teaching and committee meetings. So I have lots of ideas on my blog and in podcast episodes about how to create different kinds of rhythms and routines. If you're a person who needs some structure, I think the lowest point of entry for this is just to ask yourself, when do I do my best work? For many people, it's during the mornings. But it could be that you're, you know, a night person, and so your best hours are 7 to 10 p.m. What I would try to do is reserve time each day for heavy cognitive load work and use your best hours of the day for that. So that's just a first step you could take to create structure. I have so many more ideas on the blog and the podcast that you can check out. Related to that is this question of, how do I actually make it feel like a sabbatical? You know, many of my clients have caregiving responsibilities, and so there's going to be a daily routine in place that is very similar to when they're not on sabbatical. So again, they may not be going to campus, they don't have to teach or go to meetings, but there's still daycare drop-offs, school drop-offs. So how do you then create a routine or space so that sabbatical feels like sabbatical? And again, what I typically recommend and what I work on with my clients is thinking about, what are the things that bring you joy? You know, what are the things that you really like doing that you don't get to do in a regular semester? And trying to build in space and time into the weekly routine for that. It could be going for lunch with a friend a couple times a month, working at a coffee shop instead of at your home office. So it doesn't have to be extravagant, but there are ways we can take advantage of this time so that it feels different. And I think that helps us feel this rest, this reset that lets us come back to work afterward, feeling inspired and interested in our work again. The last thing I hear a lot about, and we spend so much time in my program on, is setting boundaries. Boundaries are not about just putting up an email, away message, and hoping for the best. We all have students, colleagues, collaborators, family members who we need to educate about our sabbatical so that they can support us. So they know what our goal is, they know what our boundaries are, they know what the expectation is, so that we can make the most of our time in the way we intend to use it. So if you haven't been thinking about boundaries, I recommend that you do. And again, I have blog posts and podcasts about this. Boundaries are going to be the guardrails that help you carry out your sabbatical plan. It's not about being mean to people or being unavailable. It's about setting clear expectations so that people know the ways that you will and will not be available to them during your sabbatical. So I think one of the biggest takeaways for me after 2 years of sabbatical coaching is that the work we do in my sabbatical coaching program is not only about the sabbatical. So it is about the sabbatical, obviously. But more often than not, the people who come to me are asking bigger questions about their careers. The sabbatical is an inflection point where people start to wonder if they're spending their time on the right things, and whether they might want to approach their work differently. Sometimes it's about the topic of their scholarship, but more often than not, it's about their work habits and routines. So I think it's kind of interesting that in a lot of cases, the sabbatical becomes this container for thinking about, what does my career look like right now? And often it's about work-life balance or kind of how much people are on email, how many different projects they're entangled in. The sabbatical becomes the container for thinking about those things. And it also becomes an opportunity to try out different patterns and habits. So it's just really interesting to me. I think often sabbatical intersects with mid-career moments. So we may have wrapped up some projects and we're thinking about moving on to new ones. So it just invites this really interesting and I think fruitful reflection on, where am I right now? Is this pace and are my working habits working for me? And if not, how can I make some changes? And I never recommend that people change everything, right? None of us are good at changing everything all at once. But I work with my clients to think about, are there small tweaks that you could make that could make work feel a bit more the way you want it to feel? Because many of us have quite a bit of autonomy. I think this is one of the advantages of being an academic. And so how can we lean into that autonomy and craft a career that feels good and that's going to be sustainable in the long run? Because the way most of us work leading up to tenure is not sustainable. So as I wind down the podcast and break for summer, I just want to thank you for listening. I hope the podcast has helped you in some way, and I hope that you'll keep listening in the future. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Sabbatical 101. If you found it helpful and want to hear more, please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'd also love it if you'd share my podcast with a friend or colleague who might be interested. If you'd like to connect to talk about my sabbatical coaching programs or to purchase an online asynchronous program, check out my website, www.bethanywilinski.com, or click the link in the show notes. You can also check out my blog, free resources, and subscribe to my monthly Sabbatical Insights newsletter. Until next time, here's to life-changing sabbaticals.